Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:53 British Summer Time. Today is June 5th. Well, today being Friday, it's also the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Let's first have a review of what's been happening this week, because golly, it has been quite an eventful move that we've seen across a whole range of asset classes. I think starting today, we begin to see that short-term interest rates, commonly known as the STIR market, is jumping to life. And this is on speculation that the Fed, and indeed a number of other central banks, may be forced to raise interest rates before the end of the year if indeed the global recession has bottomed and we may be starting to return to growth faster than anticipated. And this does leave central banks in a bit of a dilemma, because they are going to be castigated if they raise interest rates too quickly. But on the other hand, if they do it too slowly, then they're going to be castigated for sowing the seeds and stirring up inflation. So there is a very fine line to be walked in this regard. But from a trader's perspective, looking at short-term interest rates, or looking at 3-month yields, which are still remarkably low, and we have remarkably low interest rates, which by definition in the US can't fall very much further, then it is looking like there are possibilities out there to buy some insurance against further interest for, against interest rates going up at really quite low prices in here, or in other words, shorting the price chart, because it is unlikely to ever get very much above parity. And it's currently somewhere in the region of the 99 level. And if one does anticipate that interest rates are going to be going up at some point in the next year to 18 months, well then buying contracts a little bit further out the curve would be a cheap way of hedging against that possibility. Or sorry, shorting contracts a bit further up the curve would be a good way of hedging against that possibility, and that does appear to be what is happening in here today. We've seen downward dynamics on Euribor and Euro Euribor and the Euro dollar contracts, which does suggest that we're seeing traders beginning to factor in potential for the global recession to ease a bit sooner than people have been anticipating. Of course, this type of expectation is also coming on hot on the heels of a stock market rally, which is into its fourth consecutive month to the upside, and indeed, this is completing 14 consecutive weeks to the upside for a large number of markets. So, if people are starting to now factor into their equations that the global economy is bottoming out, that's not too surprising given the fact that stock markets have had such a remarkable move. The other thing that started to unfold this week was that the dollar, which has become really quite overstretched, has begun to rally, and the dollar index was up a point and a third in here today. It was stronger by 2 full cents against the euro, which is one of the biggest moves it's had against the euro in a number of weeks. The pound was also weaker by a full 2 cents against the US dollar. The Australian dollar was weaker by almost 1 cent, and we also saw a number of other currencies where the dollar has strengthened, and the dollar has been quite overextended relative to a number of currencies, and there is room for it to strengthen somewhat in the short term and to at least unwind some of this oversold condition which it's got itself into over the last 6 weeks or so. The fact that we are also seeing the precious metals coming up to this $1,000 level and pausing in that region is, and also showing weakness as the dollar strengthens, is a rather important signal, because we are now seeing something that has been evolving for the last couple of months, that precious metals have gone back to their inverse correlation with the direction of the dollar. When we were going through the massive panic that ensued following the Lehman bankruptcy, we saw that there were some instruments were considered safe havens, and these were the dollar, the yen, US treasuries or treasury markets generally, and gold. Well, gold went back up towards the all-time highs and has been consolidating in the $900 to $850 for much of the last few months. The people who had bought gold as a safe haven sold it on its rally as it pushed back above $900 in March and put some of that money into stock markets. The people who wanted to sell gold did so. And the people who are turning to gold as a longer-term safe haven or long-term store of value for their assets have returned as the dominant force in the market. And they're much more concerned about the relative value of gold in other currencies. Gold pushed up towards $980 earlier this week, but is finishing the week closer to 950. This has been two downward dynamics in 3 days, and it does suggest that that supply and demand are coming back into balance somewhat in the region of this $1,000 level, and we could see some further ranging, but in this range that is quickly developing below $1,000. And some consolidation of the very impressive gains that have been posted over the last few weeks is probably not too surprising for most people. Silver is in a very similar position, having rallied up to $16 and rallied over $4 in the last month, and is probably in need of some consolidation of those gains. It was down 66 cents today, so that is also two downward dynamics in 3 days, and does suggest that supply and demand are coming more back into balance. Platinum, having broken upwards yesterday rather emphatically, at up almost $50 yesterday, was down $23 today, and it looks a bit risky up here. It's been up on consecutive days before today, and it has broken to a new high, and if it sustains its progression of higher lows, then the upside can continue to be given the benefit of the doubt, but some consolidation of recent gains does appear likely in the precious metal markets all round. We also see that industrial metals, a number of which had broken upwards, are moving into this sort of consolidation type of phase, and we also see that oil is one of the strongest of the resources markets over the last week. It's pushed back up towards $70 and clipped 70 earlier on today, finishing down marginally on the day, but remains really quite consistent, although somewhat overextended. And that is a prognosis that we can stretch out to a large number of markets that have been rallying now for 3 consecutive months. With the move that we've also seen in treasuries this week, and treasuries have pulled back really rather violently this week. They were down another point and a half today. They're at 113.16, having peaked at the beginning of this year in the 140 level. This has been a huge move in the treasury market, and it remains consistent. On a yield basis, we see that the 10-year yield is pushing very close now to this 4% level. Or looking at it on a weekly basis, yields are back to where they were in January 2008. So we have seen a remarkable move in the treasury markets. This is at least in part starting to think about the improved economic conditions and the end of this recession. It may perhaps be a little premature to start talking about the end of the recession in the same context as a return to robust growth. It is, I think, still uncertain as to what type of recovery we're going to see once this recession has actually bottomed. Stock market performance would certainly suggest that a large number of the world's economies bottomed at the end of last year or the beginning of this year. The big question over the global economy right now is as to how fast we're going to see growth picking up once more. And just as we can divide the stock market into two distinct categories, we can probably divide the economies of the world into the same two categories, where those economies that have averted going into recession, which are primarily in Asia or Latin America, and if not, are commodity-focused markets, that's probably where growth is going to pick up fastest and strongest going forward. But when we look at the performance that has been put in by the USA, much of Europe, and much of Europe, then we're looking at potentially slower growth going forward. And the type of growth that had been taken for granted in the US in the sort of 4% level for much of the 2000s is probably an unlikely prospect going forward with the overhang of debt and the credit problems that remain outstanding, and the eventual problem as to how this debt is going to eventually be paid back. With the recession bottoming and with yields surging up towards this 4% level, then we are getting towards the type of environment where the yield on treasuries is becoming competitive toward relative to what is available in stock markets. And when that type of activity starts to occur, then we are in the latter stages of good stock market rallies. And this has been 3 consecutive months on the upside. A large number of markets have either rallied to the upper side of their ranges or broken emphatically upwards and rallied significantly above their bases. And we are approaching a time when we are going to see a pullback in consolidation that could last for a number of months before the leading markets can reassert their uptrends. When we look at the industrial metal complex and see that the industrial metal complex or the industrial resources complex is appreciating in a large number of currencies, that does suggest that that's another signal that investors are looking towards the end of this recession and the return to global growth. But it also suggests that investors are looking on this sector as a potential investment destination, and as one of the delegates at the chart seminar recently said that he had nibbled at a nickel company in Australia when nickel had broken up the first time, and he'd sold out before the high, but it was back to the level where he'd bought it at, and he was being tempted to buy it again. And there will be a lot of people thinking like this, that they may be able to get a second bite at the cherry, particularly in view of the fact that our deeds travel with us from afar, and what we have been makes us what we are, from George Eliot's Middlemarch, and that people's most recent experience has been that it hasn't paid to sell winning positions. That generally allows people to make buying decisions a bit easier, and with profits that people will have built up over the last few months, then there will be an easier conversion to the bullish hypothesis for any purchases that are ongoing. And for the large sum of cash that continues to sit on the sidelines, there is likely to be a lot of investors waiting for a pullback in order to initiate long positions. And that is likely to be a theme that will be playing out over the next months and indeed years, because the massive acceleration that we saw downwards in the panic that took place between September and the beginning of November was climactic. And we've seen base formation development get underway for a large number of markets. The acceleration that we've seen over the last 3 months out of those short bases is in some cases breathtaking to behold, but there's the world of difference between an acceleration following a bandwagon move to the upside or to the downside, and an explosion waiting to happen out of a base, which does then occur. The latter, of course, being that once we've had this acceleration, markets are likely to pull back and consolidate, the advance, and depending on what the fundamentals are, then new uptrends can begin to form consistently and get underway. And we're in the early stages of a new bull market for a large number of the leading markets that are out there. The new bull story is the same story that was beginning to dominate markets before we had the crash late or in the middle of last year. And that is that emerging markets are garnering more support, that the relative capitalization of these markets is still very low but is growing. There is enormous room for emerging markets to increase in size over the coming decades, that China and increasingly India are emergent onto the world stage and followed very closely by Brazil, and Russia has been there already for quite a while. And we are into a multipolar world where the center of gravity will be shared by a number of the large population centers and large economies of the world, that the influence of the old superpowers is decreasing, and that we're entering a new century where the major population centers of the world, primarily in Asia, will be dominant. The infrastructure development that is taking place is in conjunction with the greatest urbanization in history. This not only creates a vast demand pool for resources, and commodity-producing countries are certainly reaping the benefits in terms of their trade surpluses as a result, but also we're seeing vast numbers of new consumers entering the global economy where their per capita consumption of raw materials and all of the luxuries that we take for granted in our everyday lives, their percentage or their per capita consumption of these things is going upwards at an increasing rate. And that is something that is going to continue to drive markets forward for long periods of time to come. When we think of, for example, that in India, there is a huge number percentage of the population still under the age of 20, then the challenge in front of lawmakers is to create the infrastructure to feed, house, and educate, and subsequently employ this vast number of people. And they are doing their best, and of course, it's not just countries like India, but China has been dominant in that field for decades at this point, and this is a theme that is likely to continue for a long period of time to come. When we look at the emerging markets today, we see that they are leading to the upside, and as they're leading to the upside, not only is that providing excellent investment returns for those involved, but it is also suggesting to us that because not only are they leading in terms of their performance, but they are moving upwards first, that they are the prime destination for speculative inflows. And because of the massive crisis of confidence that we now have in the West, where people are questioning economic, civil, corporate governance, then the conversion to investing outside of one's domestic market is becoming easier. And whereas people are talking about how much money was pulled out of emerging markets last year and how much of that could flow backwards, there is a strong likelihood that even more money will flow back into those emerging markets going forward as the rate of return becomes better and as growth in those economies and growth in their stock markets accelerates, and where we continue to see the emergence of this vast new pool of consumers and their high savings rates entering the global marketplace. The companies that are going to do best are either going to be the ones that have a new technology that they can sell, and certainly technology shares are a cyclical theme and have been another leading sector over the last 6 or 7 months. But it will also be companies that benefit most from the emergence of new consumers onto the world stage, whether that is in terms of feeding them, providing them with resources, or providing them with the technology that they can't produce themselves. We're also seeing that China is moving up the value chain, and this is a major development. China started off making everything that no one else could afford to make in their own countries or wanted to make in their own countries. And we're seeing that some of that manufacturing base is being let go, while there is an increasing move towards building higher end type of product. We can increasingly anticipate that the Chinese manufacturing center will be producing better quality products at lower prices, and that manufactured goods will remain highly competitive, and that we're unlikely to see future inflation creeping into the manufacturing sector. On the other hand, because of the remarkable move that we've seen in markets over the last year, and because of the burst housing and debt bubbles that we see in much of the Western world, and because of the quantitative easing that is being engaged in by a large number of our governments, and let's be honest about it, quantitative easing is the politically correct way of saying that they're debasing our currency. Quantitative easing has only ever ended in inflation. They are selling the line that much of the debt that they've created and the money that they have put into the system is short dated, so it could be recycled out of the system relatively quickly. But that's not entirely true when we know for a fact that governments have been buying mortgage bonds, which by their nature are longer dated, and they've been buying treasury bonds or gilts. And those are long dated bonds, which are much more difficult to sanitize the system once they've been bought. It also suggests that the prospect for inflation longer term is quite high, and we would need to trust our policymakers and politicians to remove the liquidity that they've entered into the system at the beginning of an economic cycle. But given the extent and depth of the recession that we've just gone through, they're going to be slow to do that because they're going to want to make sure that they can get growth back on track. They don't want to make the mistake that Japan made by squeezing too hard to burst the bubble and raising interest rates too quickly, and in the process killing off inflation or killing off growth. So they're not going to want to do that. There is currently and the developing trade that people are starting to bet that interest rates are going to start rising sometime this year. But that remains an unlikely prospect. And if it were to occur, it would probably be very much towards the end of the year, and we would have to have some really rather spectacular news on the economic front to justify it. On the other hand, inflation could easily return in the commodity prices before we start to see interest rates starting to push back up. As long as manufactured goods stay down, and as long as there is no pressure on wage growth, and that is likely to be the case for a significant period of time going forward, then they're likely to ignore commodity prices going upwards. Oil at $70 is not the kind of problem that it would be if it were back up towards $150. And it would be better for the global economy if we saw commodity prices staying lower for longer. But with this massive amount of cash on the sidelines, and the fact that we're seeing these commodities appreciating in other in a number of currencies. It does suggest that people are pushing back into the commodity sector while they still can at relatively low levels. And nothing has happened yet to derail this consistent 3-month advance. It is becoming long in the tooth at this point, and probably there is room for a pullback and consolidation, which could take a number of months. But it's likely to be only a matter of years before we start to see some of these industrial commodities pushing back up towards their highs. And rather than the decades or ever that people were predicting, not more than 6 or 7 months ago. The prognosis or the prediction that we're going to have a depression to dwarf that of the 1930s is looking like it's looking increasingly wrong. And we are likely to return to growth for a large number of the leading markets in Asia and in commodity producing Latin America, followed very closely by the developed country commodity focused markets such as Australia, New Zealand, and Canada. And the rest of the world, i.e., the USA and Europe, is likely to have much slower growth and have a much harder time of it, as the conditions for business remain difficult, as large numbers of participants continue to be under pressure to pay down the debt that has been built up over the last few decades. And there is a strong likelihood that we're going to see the dollar become weaker as the temptation to inflate away the debt becomes stronger. But this is a competitive world, and the dollar is unlikely to rally or to deteriorate to a crisis point. So we are most likely in a ranging phase, which will be really quite volatile. And in this type of environment, where we see that the dollar rallies for a few months, where other markets can come under pressure, and when it becomes weaker, then we can see these spectacular rallies that have taken place, for example, over the last month. We can also look to the currency markets as lead indicators, because with the type of volatility that we have out there and the massive cash that we have on the sideline and the way that confidence has been shaken in the financial markets over the last couple of years, then people will do in the new cycle what they'd wish they'd done in the last one, and that's take their profits in the early parts of the bull move. This would suggest that we're unlikely to see big multi-year consistent trends develop without some rather large pullbacks in the early stages. And looking at some of these commodity indices, they're likely to have bigger pullbacks during these major reactions. But as long as they hold their progression of rising lows, then the new bull market will remain intact. Whereas if they start to break their progression of higher lows, we will see what we can deduce from that large numbers of investors are taking their money out of the market, and that would show up fastest in the currency markets. I anticipate going forward that people will focus much more on the currency value than other indicators because it is likely to become a lead indicator going forward. The commodity bull market is likely to be in place for a long number of years to come, and if we continue to see that inflation is a threat, that quantitative easing is devaluing our currency, then precious metals are likely to be able to rally back towards their highs, and there is a strong likelihood that markets such as gold can rally above $1,000 at some point this year and move into another leg upwards for this impressive uptrend to date. Relative to something like the Dow, most of the bull market for stocks relative to gold has been retraced, We are into the latter stages of this bull market, but the latter stages is also where we see the best gains. And there's a strong likelihood that gold's bull market will end in either a bubble or a massive acceleration, which will prove enormously profitable for large numbers of investors. But we also know that when we do get to that stage, an exit strategy will have to be formulated, because when it's over, gold is likely to underperform other asset classes for a generation. This is probably one of the easiest predictions that we can make, that once the commodity bull market does end, then we are going to be back into a phase where stock markets will outperform in nominal and inflation-adjusted terms for a generation subsequently. In this cycle, looking at stock markets, there are going to be those that lead, and there are going to be those same markets that perform spectacularly well in conjunction with the secular themes that are in place that will hold their value in terms of inflation. They will perform excellently when viewed in other currencies, and they will give access to investors from all over the world. And this is by easily the definition of a bubble market. And there is a strong likelihood that the next bubbles that will unfold are likely to be somewhere in the emerging markets. When we talk of bubbles, it is appropriate to talk about bursting bubbles as well. And government bonds appear to have topped out. This has been almost a 30-year bull market. And the nadir for yields was at 2%, having been closer to 15% in 1980. There is a strong likelihood that we've seen the bottom for this bear market in yields. It's the beginning of a new bull market in yields, which would suggest that we are going to have higher inflation, or at the very least, an environment where investors demand a higher yield for the kind of risk that they're taking on in buying long-dated bonds, because governments are printing these things like there is no tomorrow. There is absolutely no shortage of supply, and investors would be insane to not start to demand higher yields going forward for the kinds of risks that they're taking on, because the debt to GDP ratios continue to rise. And that's not a problem in the short term, provided it's reversed. But if we continue to see that these debts are being accrued, and that the interest on these debts is adding even more to the original debt, then we're into some serious trouble for the economies concerned. And buying their bonds doesn't sound like a very good idea. So we can anticipate that we are going to see higher yields going forward. Although this was a 30-year bull market, it could easily take another 30 years before we reach the other side of the bear market in government bond prices. With that, I think I will leave you for the weekend and wish all the best to all of you.